Welcome back to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We are continuing to roll through our team previews, and today we cover the Atlanta Braves. Joining me is Chuck Anderson. Chuck, what's up, dude?
Not much, my friend. Just enjoying all this off-season content that FWFB makes sure to get out for people. I know a lot of my friends really enjoy it. And it's the overachieving Braves that we're talking about. They pushed their time schedule ahead last year on us. And so that's going to create some interesting qualitative analysis here on if we're as hyped about some of these players as the fantasy community seems to be.
Well, living in Nashville, Tennessee, there are a lot more Braves fans than I ever would have expected. So a lot of people that I would just see randomly at, grocery stores, anywhere, et cetera, they just were really high on the Braves last year. And me being the talking baseball head I am, I was able to kind of develop some relationships with people, let people know what was coming down the pipe for them. And, I kind of made some friends. I'm getting myself some free deli at the store. It's nice.
Very nice.
Where can you reach everything, Chuck?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. That's certainly the best way. But you can also reach out to the Facebook page that FWFB has. Every once in a while, I field a question or two on there as well. And so I'm overly accessible. I enjoy the interaction with the people that help support us. So feel free to throw any questions or anything you have my way.
Nice. And you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Warner, FWFB. Let's go. Ronald Acuna, is he a top five pick for you?
He's very close. I'm purposefully in the KDS systems. I'm going to try and avoid that area because I'm worried that I don't think I could pass him up if he lasts much past five. I've had a tendency to be wrong on a couple young players. I think the only real question that we have left with Acuna is if he can stay completely healthy. Boy, he struggled early, which isn't unusual. Of course, Mike Trout did as well. And then he really turned it on late. And as far as just being able to cross off, maybe I shouldn't be avoiding taking him, because being able to cross off somebody who's, if he plays a great deal, he's probably going to steal over 20 bases. He's got 30 to 35 home run upside probably already at this point. His batting average could be very good. He's in, the heart of a young and very good lineup. He's got Freddie Freeman in front of him and Josh Donaldson to help clog up the base paths in front of him so he can knock him home. So I love Ronald Acuna. I came under some fire in our 30-team Dynasty League for FWFB. Matt kept talking to me, and I have eventually helped convince him, and he took him number one overall in a startup Dynasty League. He took Ronald Acuna over Mike Trout. So the sky's the limit here, I think.
Yeah, I'm not against that. I wouldn't have done that, but I'm certainly not against taking Acuna up there. I was one of the guys beating the drum with Acuna coming into last year that he was not worth his cost. And coming into this year, I am not beating that drum. He is well worth a top five pick. I think you're really kind of splitting hairs in the top five, really after Trout, and probably, gosh, it's hard for me not to kill somebody if they take Acuna too. Like, I don't think there's a problem with it. Like, if you take Acuna over Betts, I don't have an issue with you. I wouldn't do that myself. I would put Acuna probably five, right behind somebody like Lindor, but I just don't have an issue if somebody takes him too. Would you have an issue?
I don't have an issue with it. Again, I don't think I could quite do that. I'll tell you the one I hear people say, well, you can't take him ahead of Nolan Arenado, and I'm like, well,
he's going ninth in NFBC, though, right now.
But some people, they want to pump the brakes. They want to be sort of overly conservative about the younger player. And I just think to myself, to me, there's the floor. If the guy's going to steal probably a minimum of 15 to 20 bases, the floor is set so high and you're helping cross something off that you're going to have to worry about the rest of the draft, that personally for me, I don't struggle with him getting taken anywhere after the second pick. I don't think I can do more than that, but so be it. I mean, people want to talk to their friends about how they were on this guy at the right time. So some people are going to jump up that high to get him.
Well, The only argument against him right now is the durability, which I think can be an argument for anybody in baseball. And maybe after that, his contact not being quite as good as others around that spot. At the same time, though, he improved as the year went on. And let me just, you know, throw this out there as well. Against in-division opponents, so let's look at Miami. He hit .342 with 7 home runs and 3 stolen bases and 73 at-bats. Against the Mets, he hit .326 with 2 stolen bases, a home run, and 43 at-bats. Against Philly, the worst team he hit against, he hit .271 with 2 stolen bases and 48 at-bats. And then against Washington, 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 38 at bats, .368 batting average. So that's, I mean, it just, if we're talking about pure starts, not only was his skills amazing, but he really demolished his opponents that he's going to be facing the majority of the time. So all in a nutshell, I think that Acuna is a surefire top five pick right now being taken outside of that. I think that he should be going above JD Martinez, people. And that's me. I guess I'm on an island with that, but he should be a top five pick.
No issues. You'll get no argument from me, sir. I mean, how many stolen bases are you going to get from JD Martinez? And if you go back a couple years, the concern about JD Martinez was his health as well. So,
yep, absolutely.
No issues whatsoever with that.
Ozzie Albies finished the season with a .261 batting average, 24 home runs, 14 stolen bases. That after an April in which he hit 8 of those home runs and stole 3 of those bases with a .320 batting average. So, the second half of the year, I think, is the biggest kind of question mark for him. 7 home runs, 7 stolen bases, .245 batting average. The walk rate went up from the first half. The contact stayed the same. Hard contact went down, plummeted, in fact, and so did all of his power metrics along with it. He still hit a ton of fly balls, though, with the first and second half compared to each other. Overall, still a really good fantasy commodity, but you kind of wonder in the back of your mind, is he able to be able to put up premier stats an entire season? Top 50 pick right now for Albies, pretty affordable based on what he can offer you. But my question to you is, does the upside get much higher than 24 home runs and 14 stolen bases for Albies?
Well, I think the stolen bases can go up. I have a lot of questions about the home runs. Not only because he slowed down so much over the second half or after the first month, really. Just also, I mean, he's a relatively free swinger. I mean, he did walk 5% of the time last year, but that .305 OBP, is not great by any means. And again, this is the flip side of the coin that I've talked to you about before, Mike, that middle infielders are so hard to gauge from year to year. Just think about the Trevor Story story, which I get to say there. Okay. The Trevor Story that, you know, went from stud young player to, oh, I don't want anything to do with him. Now after the next year, he's back to the stud young player. Think about Xander Bogaerts. Now he's wandered all over the place. Top 50 is too rich for my blood. I just think there's too much uncertainty there for me, despite the fact that I was the one beating his drum. I remember we had Todd Zola on, and at the end of the 2016 season, the 2017 season when he came up, I said, boy, Ozzie Albies being the youngest player called up for that entire season that he was called up, I'm like, to me, he's got this incredible upside, and I owned him in early drafts, and he certainly paid off for me because he was at such a low draft spot to start off the last offseason. But then by the time draft season got here, all of a sudden you had to pay a pretty good price for him, and that price has just gone up now. I think top 50 is too rich for my blood.
I agree, actually, and that might sound shocking to people, but Albies is a top 100 player to me, maybe even top 75, but top 50 is really pushing it. And the reason I brought up the upside question to you is people that don't walk, and mind you, Albies had an almost 10% walk rate in 2017, so I'm not saying that he is incapable of bringing that walk rate up, but he makes a ton of contact, so that definitely helps my thoughts of him continuing to steal a high volume of bases. But if he doesn't walk, then traditionally you won't have as many chances to steal bases. And the Braves really aren't a team that like to rip and fire on the base pass. Last year they were top 10 in stolen base attempts per game. And, I understand that. But the year before they were much lower. And I just don't know if they are really wanting to use Albies in that capacity. Like, are they really going to want to give him the green light as much as they did last year? They could. And, you know, obviously the walk rate that I'm talking about kind of bakes into that as well. But his stolen base attempts did go down last year as his walk rate grew. All that said, I don't think that he's going to be a bad player by any means. I think he's going to end up actually having a much better batting average. But I also don't think that he does much better than what he did last year. I certainly don't think he scores 100 runs again, which really kind of makes me think that he's going to end up, when you talk about roto dollar value and baking all of his stats into $1 amount, which was $21 last year, I think that he probably ends up the same this year, just having the stats be kind of differently placed, or placed differently, maybe less in runs, more in batting average, et cetera. So all that to say, I think Albies is being overdrafted just by a little bit. I would probably take him a little bit later, maybe top 75. And, you know, obviously that's not going to be the case. He might even have his ADP grow. I know everybody was really on him last year, especially after Paul Spohr said something about it. And I don't think we're having as much hype going into this year based on the second half slump, but at the same time, I still think it's too rich. I went way too long on Albies. Let's talk about Freddie Freeman. We should be able to go fairly quick on him. What's your thoughts, other than the fact that he's just really good?
I think he's going too late.
Yeah.
I see him sneak into the second round and stuff, and I just don't get that.
I don't either.
You have the ADP in front of you, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people are rising up. Oh, I just think that's way too late. I don't know what else to say. I mean, you know, it used to be that we thought didn't have any power. Well, he's had some pretty decent power seasons. It used to be, that we didn't believe in their lineup. Well, now he's got all kinds of protection. I mean, they brought in Josh Donaldson too. I mean, I don't know what the question is anymore with the guy. I mean, he's been the consummate professional. First base has thinned out. I think he's going way too late.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either. I'm looking at the names around him, and I guess we can kind of talk about some of the names around him really fast and see what we would choose. But, you know, Bryce Harper is 15th. I don't know how you feel about that. I would take Freeman over Harper.
I think you can make a pretty strong case.
Depending on where it lands as well with Harper. If you were to land in some, obviously Philadelphia is probably the highest
likelihood.
Highest likelihood at the moment. You also have somebody like the White Sox who are creeping around in there, even Washington. Either way, Jose Altuve.
I definitely prefer Freddie Freeman there.
I do as well. Chris Sale, I'm taking Freeman.
Not even considering Sale versus Freeman.
Yeah, Aaron Judge, I'm taking Freeman.
I don't really even understand how you could do that.
Trevor Story is going above Freeman. That's probably the one exception, because Story's upside is just that much higher, I think, than Freeman, just based on the stolen bases.
Well, I mean, people really like to hook into that Rockies offense, and I really can't blame them for that. So I get that part of it.
And then Goldschmidt.
Again, when you look at all those players, I mean, the one thing I keep thinking is take a really strong look before you draft at first base. Take a look at it, because it is not pretty at all.
First base is awful going into this year. We'll do a separate first base pod for Friends with Fantasy Benefits, absolutely. But first base just takes a massive drop, I would say, right after Abreu. I mean, if you feel good about having, even Jesus Aguilar is the seventh first baseman right now, and there's a lot of great things that Aguilar did last year, but are we really going to want to go into our drafts having Jesus Aguilar as our starting first baseman? Or Max Muncy at 9, Joey Gallo at 10, Matt Olson 11, Jerickson Profar 12. I mean, we're just kind of going into it here. I mean, all of a sudden, Eric Hosmer is looking pretty sweet at pick 170.
I'm glad I didn't eat yet as you're going over that, because I traditionally, I've played fantasy baseball so long, traditionally first base was a place you could forget about till the end of the draft.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Now I don't feel that way. The only player and maybe I'm wrong for this, but the only player I still like more than Freeman that you mentioned is I'm hanging on to some Bryce Harper upside. I think Harper is going too low as well.
And in a shallow format, I would take Harper over Freeman just because I think that Harper obviously possesses another season or two, or maybe even more than that, that he did a couple of years ago that really jolted him up into the top, fantasy area. But let's go and talk about Josh Donaldson, who I think is criminally underrated coming into drafts this year. I mean, he's actually the fifth highest Brave in terms of ADP. I understand his, you know, he's age 33. He's coming off a year that he, you know, he obviously just had partial time and was struggling with injuries. But isn't last year just kind of a season that you just kind of forget, throw to the side and say, you know what, it was a lost year. Toronto was awful. You know, who really cares? I understand, you know, he was traded to Cleveland, et cetera. But when he was traded to Cleveland, he did well. He had 280 in a month, you know, three home runs and 50 at-bats. He had a 17% walk rate that month. Obviously, his contact skills were back. He had an 80% contact rate. I mean, he hit balls on the ground, et cetera. But I don't understand Donaldson going outside the top 100. I think that it's pretty criminal.
Yeah, that's too low. The hate has gone too far, to quote another old ESPN axiom. I think the thing with Donaldson for me is I like him a lot better than his ADP, but I still think there's a lot of leagues where he's going to go, you know, in the 80s.
Much higher.
I think his ADP is going to get higher than that. And I wish he had landed on an American League team so he could DH some to sort of help him along. He's not as high mileage a player as you might think, because his career started later. But at the same time, I think what you're seeing right now is you're seeing people drafting a lot of draft and hold leagues going into the ADPs that you're seeing, and you're seeing people remember that he couldn't throw from third base to first base for a while last year, and now he's on a National League team. You know, his upside for a player being taken there, he's got as much chance to perform as a first round player as you could ever imagine drafting him outside the top 100. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, my thing is that his power metrics really haven't changed. I mean, you know, his glory years with Toronto were, you know, he averaged a 270, 265 ISO. He had a 289 ISO in 2017. You know, last year starts off with a 203 ISO, or has a 203 ISO between the two teams, 190 with Toronto. But, you know, it still came back, you know, even in a short sample with Cleveland. My point being, you know, especially when you look at his Statcast stuff too, you know, last year he had his worst hard hit rate. Well, of course he did. He was hurt. His walk rate, though, was still absolutely spectacular. It tells me that his plate skills are still intact. And that's what you're really drafting him for, right? His ability to hit for power and his plate skills. His plate skills haven't changed, and his power metrics have really not fallen that far off if you are able to take last season and kind of throw it out the window a bit. In fact, he hit more barrels in, you know, 2017 than he did in 2018. And those that aren't familiar with barrels, it's a mix of hard hit plus launch angle. So I think that this is a opportunity for us to get a guy that is going to end up being a top four round or possibly even three or two round talent, and getting him in the seventh, eighth, ninth round, maybe the sixth round if people are really starting to kind of get on the hype train of Donaldson. But even so, you're still getting a couple rounds of profit, in my opinion. And you on top of all of this, get to put him on the lineup with some guys that we just talked about: Freddie Freeman, Ozzy Albies, Ronald Acuna, you know, Ender Inciarte we're about to talk about. This is a team that is, I think, loaded and ready to make an even bigger step coming into this year, and Donaldson, I think, is a big part of that.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, and don't forget the fact that it's a pretty nice park to hit in as well.
Yeah, even, and I did the, you know, I'd have to look for the tweet, but, you know, people were talking about the ballpark, et cetera, and really it's mainly better for, you know, people that hit it to right field. But Josh Donaldson hits home runs everywhere. He's not just a pull power hitter. He hits them to all parts of the field, and again, you know, I'm not going to sit here and dig up the tweet, but my tweet was saying that it didn't matter for Donaldson. He's going to hit it out anywhere in SunTrust, not just in right field.
Certainly.
Or left field, sorry. All right, and Inciarte, you know, I mentioned him briefly while we were talking about Donaldson. Another 20-plus stolen base season, three of the last 4 years. Really, every year you can count on him for stolen bases, and a very consistent contributor in every facet of fantasy. You know, even in power, he's netted double-digit home runs the last couple of seasons. I think that he's a pretty solid player just overall, and I don't think anybody would disagree with me there. But I guess the question is, he's a top 140 pick right now. I think taking him there would expect that he's going to continue what he's been doing, and you know, he's had 83 and 93 runs scored the last couple of years, actually 85 dating back to 2016. I guess we would have to bake in that he would score, you know, the same amount of runs while putting the same amount of power and stolen bases up that he's done the last couple of years as well to be able to fulfill that draft spot. So I guess my question is, do you think he can do what he's been doing the last couple of years while being, you know, the leadoff hitter for the Braves more than likely?
Well, I certainly see the possibility of that happening. I think the biggest thing here to me is, you know, we didn't really talk about with Ozzie Albies, roster resources claiming Albies is going to hit fifth. Donaldson's going to hit second. The question comes in twofold for me. The first question is, okay, last year he hit 265, which is unusually low for him. I mean, you have to go back to like 2011 in his professional career to see a batting average that was that low. And, you know, he did have a lower BABIP for a speed guy, 293. But my point being is that I'm – and he was an uneven player last year. Like, he was good for stretches and he struggled for stretches last year. So if he struggles for a while, is there a chance that he moves down in the lineup? Would be my slight concern about him. At the same time, a guy who had 28 stolen bases last year, with the way that people are forgetting about speed, drafting traditionally for a few rounds and then realizing that they have to catch up, I think that means that he could get pulled. And I'm not going to do that under any circumstances. So I think that could pull up his ADP. A little bit more than I'm comfortable with. So it just depends exactly how it plays out. Is he a good player? Absolutely, he's a good player. And is he worth owning even if he moves down to the sixth or the seventh hole in that lineup? Absolutely. But I think to really keep the edge and have the upside that we want him to have, he needs to stay at the top of that lineup. And I'm not 100% sold that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't like it. And as I'm kind of digging through some of his hit metrics and his speed metrics, his speed it worries me a little bit because he, you know, while he had, you know, 28 stolen bases last year, 21 of them came in the first half, and his speed score has gone down significantly the last 2 years. You know, from 2016 to 2018, it's went down almost 30 points, and I'm not a fan of that, obviously. And, you know, really he had more opportunities than ever last year, any time in his career. So a career high in opportunities, we can't expect that again. And with his speed score going down again, last season, I think even if it stays the same, that his baseline is probably like 18 to 20 stolen bases this year, which I can see easily. And then that obviously changes the conversation we're having, because, you know, last year even he dropped in the lineup to sixth and seventh a good amount. He actually had 38 games at sixth, 27 at seventh. You know, he batted second 23 times and then 11 times in the nine hole. I mean, he did have the majority of his time at the top of the lineup, but still the argument remains the same. If he is not hitting at the top of the lineup and he's not going to steal as much, then we're really just looking for a guy that, you know, while he will improve in batting average, to what extent, and doesn't offer that much in pop, and, you know, it's kind of just a player that we're going to be getting a little bit out of in every category, which is great, but probably isn't worth a top 150 pick.
Yeah, you know, in some of these early drafts too, you got to remember there's an overall, and how much upside do we feel like Ender in
that much
really has. I mean, he's a hell of a roster fill kind of guy in a 14 team league, and I'm not saying he's not, because he's not going to hurt you anywhere, and you're just trying to make sure that, you know, you're competitive in a league like that. But when you're swinging for the fences, literally and figuratively in this case, when you're swinging for the fences with your picks, you know, he kind of scares me a little bit. I'll be a little surprised. I just want to mention that the hot stove rumors this whole offseason, a number of them have been about the Braves adding potentially outfielders, because we don't know what's happening with Nick Markakis, and potentially adding center fielders. You know, everything from the A.J. Pollock lines, which looks like maybe that's not what's going to happen with Pollock, but it seems like there's been talk of trades of people coming in that could maybe help cut into his time as well. So early drafts, I'm going to stay away a little bit more than once I realize that he's fully stabilized where he's at.
Talking about a real stable asset, let's turn it to Dansby Swanson, who is probably as stable as they come, right?
Yeah, he's stable, all right.
I'm not a fan. I don't know what your thoughts are. I know he ended up with a, you know, 14 and 10 year, but once again, 238 batting average for a guy that I watched a ton of at Vanderbilt, who just really displayed a lot of patience and really good plate skills. You know, even despite having an 11% walk rate and a 77% contact from July on last season, I'm just not impressed. I'm just not. And, you know, he's going to add some stolen bases, which is nice because he does have that aspect to his game, but really not a burner out there. Not really a good power hitter either. His power metrics are all under league average. Doesn't offer anything in batting average. Like, I just don't see anything here other than just a few home runs and stolen bases, and obviously playing in a good lineup. I disagree with drafting Dansby Swanson. I'm not a fan. What's your thoughts?
I agree. And when you get someone who's got to spend most of his time hitting around the pitcher like that, that really sort of spooks me away from thinking that he could have any sort of spikes in his counting stats as well. I've never been a Dansby Swanson guy. I think he was pushed a little too far, and maybe because he was the prized piece in that big Shelby Miller trade. I've never been a Dansby Swanson guy. He's obviously a good glove guy, a far better reality player than he is a fantasy player.
Yeah, I will say he's going 370th. That is a bit, a bit crazy, I guess. I feel like somebody that's going to be getting a starting job, and even if he is underwhelming, the stat accumulation alone should net him a top 300 spot, you would think, right?
Yeah, and when you say that 370, something like that, whenever I hear that, I think to myself, well, you know, when you're doing draft and holds, you've got to have two or three backups at every position. And when you have somebody who you know is going to be on the field, you know, if you need to patch in for a week or a week and a half till you get somebody back, I mean, Dansby Swanson is good. If you're in a 12 or a 14 team league and you're pinning much hope on Dansby Swanson being an excellent choice for even your middle infield slot, I don't think you're in touch with reality.
No, yeah, and you're completely right. I mean, it's always league relevant, right? So I mean, if you're in a format like a draft and hold where everybody's getting drafted, I mean, everybody, then yeah, you know, Dansby Swanson could, you know, hold some value. But
the 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, the Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market, with featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more. You will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com, and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
You know, anyways, Adam Duvall, just kind of churning through the rest of this offense here. After you get through the big five, right, you know, Inciarte, Donaldson, Freeman, Acuna, and Albies, we have kind of three question marks here. You have, you know, Dansby Swanson, who we just covered, Adam Duvall here, and then Brian McCann. Duvall, I think, is better than what he did last year. I mean, he's not a 195 hitter. He's not a great hitter, but we've seen just really good power from him the last couple seasons. And then last year, you know, mind you, the at bats obviously were significantly depressed. I just don't consider him to be as bad as that. 15 home runs and 384 at bats. The power metrics remains really good. I mean, they weren't as good as his 2016 season. But do you think that there's some type of resurgence here for Adam Duvall, just simply in the power department?
No, I don't know how he couldn't. I mean, he showed so much power there for a while when he was a Red. And obviously that was a good place to hit. I can't fathom him falling this far this fast. I mean, he is already 30 years old, and, you know, I remember giving Justin a hard time about Duvall because I believe he came from the San Francisco organization when he broke out in Cincinnati. But I think as a team that, you know, has a new stadium and they're trying to compete, I'm a little worried that he's going to really hold on to that job. I don't think he's got a lot of job security. I think if his batting average bottoms out again for a while to start the year, I don't know how much leash he's got there. I would be surprised I have no problem with. I can imagine that his ADP can't be very pretty. And I can certainly fathom and see a scenario where he gets back to, say, the 25 home run stage if he can just, you know, start out relatively hot and hold on to a majority of at-bats. And with where you can pick him up, there's some value to that. But again, in a 12 or a 14 team league, if you're holding much stock or thinking of him as an automatic 30 home run guy, I think you're probably being a little overly optimistic.
No, I agree. I think that he can, I mean, he's 30 years old at this point, so we shouldn't expect him to rebound to the extent that he did in 2016, but I'd say the first month. You'll be able to find out the first month. Even if I guess there is a scenario where he doesn't crack the opening day roster as well. So obviously monitor his spring training, because I mean it was so disastrous last year that the Braves do have the prospects to just entirely cut bait and then bring one of them up to start the season. We'll kind of keep tabs on that. But as of right now, I think Duvall has to get better from last year. Absolutely. I don't know how he ends up being much worse. So.
Yeah. 15 home runs was pretty unthinkable. I mean, he played 138 games, too. And, you know, so it's just, I can't fathom that, really. I mean, 61 RBIs. I don't know. It was
he hits a ton of fly balls, and I understand his home run to fly ball rate dropped for the second year in a row, but his power metrics plus the fly ball rate should net him, like, automatically in 400 at-bats, 20 home runs at least. So, you know, even if you're not, you know, he's not a really good contact guy, and you know he doesn't walk a lot as well, but despite all that, he should be able to hit for 20 home runs, so they, you know, whatever. 35-year-old Brian McCann, it was the other guy that we kind of mentioned in the rounding out the Braves starting lineup, at least as of right now on Roster Resource, really plummeted last year, dropped down to, you know, a once just automatic catcher that we could expect 20 home runs, and, you know, obviously the batting average would fluctuate, but, you know, anywhere between like 240 and 270, all of a sudden his career, you know, especially the last 2 years here, have kind of started to turn in the wrong direction. The Braves obviously want to use him for the right field spot in, or not right field, they want to use him at catcher obviously, but they want him, his power to help him out, you know, especially with right field being great at SunTrust Park. What are your thoughts for him possibly rebounding in that category? I do like older catchers. You know, Kurt Suzuki was able to find a pretty good last couple of seasons with the, you know, Athletics and obviously the Braves, etc. Do you think McCann can possibly rebound a bit here with Atlanta?
I don't particularly like his chances. Again, he's in exactly the right spot, and this would be a light, nice little homecoming story from him. He was obviously originally drafted by Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot, there's sort of a feel-good story behind it. I look at the overall numbers, you know, the 7 home runs last year is like, wow. I mean, when that was his main attribute. He's never been a great BABIP guy, but he's certainly got pretty unlucky last year with a 229 BABIP. I mean, he did sneak his OBP up over 300. But, you know, in this catcher landscape, I guess he's somebody that you're going to have to use. I mean, he was obviously hurt for a chunk of last year, too, because he only played 63 games.
Yeah, big knee problem. Level. Yeah.
So, but there's been a lot of talk about that. And when you're talking about a grizzled veteran who was really, you know, not only driven hard in the regular season, but a lot of playoff games too between the Braves and the Yankees. You know, it's easier for me to think that I like Suzuki more than him. I know Suzuki's not on this team anymore. I like Suzuki more than him, and I also like their other catcher Tyler Flowers more than him. So, and actually his walk rate kind of plummeted a little last year too. So I don't know, the signs, my normal signs I look for are not, very happy. I mean, a 127 ISO is not something that you want out of a catcher who's got very limited batting average upside.
D. Gordon's like, I see you, man. I'm right here with you. I think McCann will definitely, barring his knee still causing him a ton of problems, I think, you know, he hits kind of like Duvall. He hits so many fly balls that unless his power is just completely cratered at this point, there's no way he doesn't start hitting the ball over the fence more. It just is a kind of a question as to whether the knee is ready and he's able to really just kind of be on the strong side of a platoon. He'll get half the at-bats, and then Tyler Flowers, who we can kind of bring into the fold here as well, will also mix in, you know, somebody that, you know, had a couple of years where he had good batting average and then kind of cratered last year with, you know, 8 home runs as opposed to the 12 he hit in 2017. But I think between the two of them, you will get pretty good catching stats as a whole in terms of power, probably like 20 to 25 home runs between the two of them. It's just kind of, what do you do from that with that from a fantasy lens? You know, that's another reason catcher is just so volatile from year to year, especially right now in this current landscape, because you have multiple options going for mostly every team in baseball. And, you know, this is another example of, you know, Flowers and McCann being two guys that, you know, you can see some value from either of them. And in NL only leagues and deeper, you know, mixed formats, you can certainly use them for your team as a second catcher, or whatever. But from a one catcher perspective, they both are really just not significant to me.
I concur completely. I mean, you know, Flowers is a guy who's had some spikes in his offensive game. He's certainly used to being a platoon catcher at this point. I mean, in the last 3 years, 83 games, 99 games, 82 games. So he's used to it. So, you know, he's a good safety net second catcher, you know, especially if he's your third catcher in some scenarios, if you're in a two-catcher league or a daily format league. But at the same time, I mean, it's hard for me to get overly excited because the upside is obviously going to be pretty limited when he's sharing time. And I don't really think there's a scenario, even if McCann were hurt and the knee was a big problem, I don't see him going back to catching a lot more games. I don't think he's more than, you know, a 90 catcher kind of 90 games caught kind of guy at this point, probably.
Charlie Culberson and Yoan Camargo are rounding out the bench for this team. I'd say, especially out of both of them, Camargo is the more interesting candidate, simply because he can play some outfield. And like we mentioned with Adam Duvall, if he's not able to, in the first month or so of the season, be able to rebound, or if he doesn't make the team out of the gate, Camargo showed some flashes last year of doing some. I mean, he hit 19 home runs, which I don't think he would do again, even in a full-time at-bat scenario. But his second half, 12 home runs, 284 batting average, while it wasn't real because he, you know, obviously was boosted by a 340 BABIP, and the power metrics definitely did not say that he should have been hitting as many home runs as he did. But regardless, I just, when you bake in the home run to fly ball rate being 17%, he's never really been somebody with a high home run to fly ball rate. The power metrics don't support what he did in the power department for the year, especially what he did in the second half. While he's interesting and there is an avenue for him to play again, and he has, you know, multiple position eligibility, I just don't think he's a good enough hitter to really give us a lot overall. So even if he does get a full-time-ish role, I'm not really that big of a fan of Camargo, but I do at least acknowledge that he has the possibility to be kind of another, again, just kind of flexible option for our team, especially in deeper format, well, only in deeper formats, that can kind of help us in spots here and there, but overall just not really that excited.
Well, you hit my hot button topic. I'm on the Camargo Island. I have been. I got him in the 30 team league as well. I think a 25-year-old that can supply, you know, 270 plus batting average, that has, you know, sort of this 10 to 15 stolen base pop. I think that he's a guy that I would really love to see the Braves actually trade and give a chance to be a full-blown player. Because he can play short, he can play third, he can play the outfield, he can play first. I believe a lot more in the overall skill set than most people do. And part of that is he just absolutely destroyed the Brewers when we played him last year. So I was consistently seeing him at his best, and he had a lot of big hits down the stretch for the Braves last year. And all the talk in the middle of last year was that the Braves were going to have to go and get a third baseman, and then, you know, they went and they picked up Bautista for a cup of coffee, and as the season wore on, they seemed to rely more and more on Camargo. Well, then this offseason they completely went away from that and they brought in Josh Donaldson and what have you. So, but I'm not the hugest believer in Dansby Swanson either, in case you didn't notice from my earlier analysis. So I wrongfully believe that that Camargo is going to find his way into a pretty significant role. Worst case scenario is sort of this Hernan Perez parole role from a couple of years. Obviously, he doesn't have the speed that Hernan Perez had, but he's a really good glove guy that I think there's some holes in this team, and they're going to have a hard time keeping him out of the lineup if they don't feel like they've adequately filled the holes, whether it be in the outfield or, you know, if Albies were to struggle or Swanson were to struggle, or Donaldson, by the way, could get hurt again. So there's which I don't want to have happen because he's a fun guy to have in the game. But so anyway, I'm on Camargo Island. I think he's going to figure out a way to be pretty valuable this year. Again, he's not a 12-team guy, but he's certainly a guy that I would lean on as a reserve player in 14-team drafts. And he's a guy I will have many shares of in bigger formats.
Let's turn to the pitching staff. Mike Foltynewicz. Whatever it is. Manwich? Are we talking about Manwiches? No. he is the fourth Brave, according to ADP right now, a top 80 pick. This after going over 180 innings for the first time in his career, over 200 strikeouts, 2.85 ERA, 1.08 whip. While I think he has improved, and you know, when you look into his metrics and everything, his expected ERA was 3.7, so obviously he outproduced what he was supposed to do. But despite that, going into this year, I think he can be a fine starting pitcher, 3 or 4. Really good secondary offering in the slider, almost a 19% swing strike rate on that per Baseball HQ. I think, you know, 11% swing strike rate overall netted him almost a 10 strikeout per nine. I don't think he'll, you know, he's been historically an 8 strikeout per 9 guy. I think he starts leaning more towards there. And he's always given up home runs, too. He had a career high home run rate last year. I think that those bounce back up as well. So, you know, really, when you kind of put it all into one kind of, you know, score for me, I think he's a starting pitcher 3 or 4, maybe even a starting pitcher 5. If we're talking about Foltynewicz and Glasnow, I mean, because I'm a Rays homer, I'm going to go Glasnow. But despite that, I think it's really close between the two of them. I actually think that they're fairly similar in some of their profiles as well. But, you know, not a big ground ball guy. He had a 43% ground ball rate last year. He somewhat is a fly baller, which I don't love either. But despite all that, the walk rate plus the ability to give up home runs worries me a little bit. And plus, I just think that overall he's going to take a step back. So, you know, 260 BABIP against last season. I'm kind of just reading all these things all to say that I think that he is going to take a step back. But let's not make it out to be that he's not going to be productive. I think if he's a starting pitcher 4 for your team, that's pretty solid and a solid place to get him. But if he's like a 3 or a 2, then that's where I'm really kind of starting to see some problems.
Well, that's it's funny that you mention it that way because in the punt ace strategy discussions that I've heard, both that I've heard with Matt Thompson directly and that I've heard, you know, through Sleeper in the Bust and some of the other avenues, Foltynewicz is talked about as somebody that you'd get as one of those first two pitchers to have like
don't a like co- that
to have a co- have a co-ace. So, and you know, when you said his ADP, I don't see too many people that are going to be able to get him as their third or fourth starter if they have to get him in the top 80 or 85 picks. You know, I tried to do, you know, a deep dive on him to try and figure out exactly what happened. You know, his velocity was up last year on his fastball and his slider, and the best part of that is it created a greater delta between the two, which means, you know, he had like a, you know, he had, it was 8.2 in 17 was the delta, and 9.6 in 18, which is a pretty big difference, you know, almost a mile and a half hour, half per hour difference between his average fastball velocity and his average slider velocity. It went up that much. So that makes the slider that much better of a pitch. And I noticed that is, you know, he threw that slider over 6% more of the time last year. So we are going to be on different parts of this island completely. I will not quote unquote target him. I think his stuff has always been better than what his what his results have ever turned out to be. And you said that rightfully when he was, you know, we couldn't figure out how he was only striking out 8 people per 9 before last year. So I think maybe he found himself a little bit, and I think he's going to be closer to the talent that we thought he was. I'm not excited about him by any means being my my first pitcher off the board, and that means that I'm probably going to take 2 more pitchers with the next 2 picks if that ever happens. But I think he's a candidate to you know, to be a pretty strong second tier pitcher. So you know, we're in a different area. I see some of the numbers in the pitch mix, and I think pitch mix is the answer as to why he improved last year, and we'll see if he can keep it up or not.
Oh, it's definitely why he improved. I you know, mentioned that when I talked about the slider usage, and you know him. I didn't know he bumped his velocity with his slider, but the 19% swinging strike rate is obviously phenomenal. You know, I like Fultonowicz. I think just my stance here is, you know, he was a top 15 starter in the ESPN Player Rater last year, and if you're thinking that he's going to be a top 15 guy again, I disagree. I think if you have him as your top starter, even if you miss and match a couple of guys, you know, in the, you know, rounds, you know, after that, you could be in some trouble with him. Maybe not necessarily some of the other value picks you get, but just he's had a long track history of giving up home runs and of not being as good as he was last season. So even with a new pitch mix, I don't necessarily think that the consistent output that we've seen in the years prior is all of a sudden trumped by one change in the pitch mix, because eventually he's going to have to make another adjustment because people will get on to that. But I'm making it sound like I hate him. I just don't like the draft cost based on this year. I think that he is going to take a step back. Doesn't mean I dislike him. I don't think I will be ending up with many shares of him based on where he's going.
Well, Jameson Taillon is going in roughly the same area, and I would
go Taillon.
I would much more like Taillon,
yes.
Even though I don't like the team around him nearly as much as I like the Braves. So, I mean, I have some skepticism as well. I was just pointing out that I don't think you won't find too many leagues, I don't think, where you're going to get him as less than
pitcher 2 or 3.
Yeah, and that's you're right. I mean, that is scary because he doesn't have much of a track record of being significantly better than that.
The innings too kind of scare me, just because I mean the innings play a role in his value because not many guys are going over 180 innings pitched, but at the same time he's never went over 180 innings other than last season, so that's also kind of a little bit of a red flag to me. But he's also young enough to make a change. Again, my stance is that I'm probably not going to have any shares, but at the same time, I'm a little bit optimistic for the future. Not necessarily this year. I do think he takes a step back, but for the future and like keeper leagues and such, I think that he's a asset that is growing in value, not necessarily dropping.
Well, before last year, a lot of people thought he was destined to be a relief pitcher.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Now I think the one thing that's changed is people think that he's going to make a run of it here for a while, at least as a starter.
Be a possible ace, even. You know, I'm hearing. Number 2 starter, et cetera. But let's talk about a guy that's definitely destined to be a reliever. That's Julio Teheran, who just has never been able to find a third pitch. Last year in the second half, he did have a 3.68 ERA, and I suppose that's fairly usable for sure in this landscape. But I'm just not a fan. He did up his swing strike rate last year to 13%, especially in the second half. That grew his strikeout rate to almost one per inning, and that's obviously great. The control, though, is still a problem. He is not able to get ahead of hitters. He's giving up way too many home runs. I mean, again, for another year, he has given up more than 1.2 home runs per 9. So that's, you know, 3 of the last 4 seasons that he's given up a ton of home runs. And I just don't see that's going to stop anytime soon. Fly ball pitcher, doesn't have good control of his stuff, doesn't have more than 2 pitches. And, you know, despite a decent second half last year, I'm not optimistic for this year. What about you?
I think he's been so disastrous in that home park. A lot of people projected him to be traded this offseason, and that hasn't happened. And maybe that's because he's been so bad there that they feel like they're trying to trade him at a low point. But at the same time, I mean, Sonny Gray is, you know, just signed a big deal too, and he's obviously getting traded at a low point as well. Although Teheran was never kind of as good as Sonny Gray was in flashes. Although Teheran had some really good moments early in his career. I never know exactly how to feel about him. I used to be on the Julio Teheran Island, but I bailed, and I've basically been paddling away from it as fast as I can ever since, because he's not giving me enough to think I could get back on board, and that's sort of where I am on it. He's listed as their number two starter. I don't really think he is.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Let's shift to Kevin Gausman, who was pretty decent after the trade to Atlanta. I still will never be able to quit him. When you look at just the second half as a whole, he posted a 3.63 ERA, 1.23 WHIP. That was on a 280 BABIP against, and usually BABIPs kind of trend back to 300 with pitchers, whether they have a good year or a bad year. It usually always kind of regresses back to that. But it netted a 4.53 expected ERA. Still possesses pretty decent ground ball tilt, but he didn't strike anyone out in the second half. He was a liability in strikeouts, in fact, at 6 strikeouts per 9, despite the improved first pitch strike rate, which helped his walk rate. He still gave up a few too many home runs. His velocity isn't premium. He doesn't really have a premium second pitch, to me at least. I know some people like a few of his offerings, but my shine has definitely worn down on Kevin Gausman throughout the years. He's going to be 28 this year. Somebody that you can rely on for innings. He's had 180 innings in each of the last three seasons. But I'm, even with a potential step forward with the Braves, maybe they found some way for him to be a little bit more serviceable. I just don't know how much upside he truly has. Right now he's a top 200 pick. I think his upside is like that of a top, 50 starter, 40 starter, and that just really doesn't give enough value to me to not take one of the higher upside arms around him.
Yeah, I don't really feel like he has that top 40 upside any longer. And like he was projected, because he had a number of years and a number of stops in the minors where he was more like a 10.5, 11 ERA or 11 K per 9 guy. And that's just doesn't appear to be who he is anymore at all. That really cuts into some of the upside as far as I'm concerned. He gets his ERA under 4 last year, but his FIP and his XFIP were over 4, so they didn't really buy into it that much. Projection systems have him projected for over a 4 ERA. He got traded right around the same time that Glasnow got traded, and people have this tendency to sort of group them together, and I don't see that at all. Glasnow's younger, and he's got maybe 2 times as high a ceiling as I see in Kevin Gausman anymore. He's an endgame play where you could stream him, and maybe he will be streaky because he has been streaky for a large chunk of his career at this point. So I can see that, but I wouldn't pin any hopes on him being your savior to be a late number 3 or number 4 starter. I think that's way, way, way too much painting your world into a happy little cloud.
I agree. Let's move to Sean Newcomb, who was once again pretty good in the first half. He had a 2.71 ERA, and then the bottom kind of fell out, and he cratered to a 5.45 ERA in the second half, 1.52 WHIP. The control problems reared its ugly head once again, so he just is going to continue to live up to the stigma, which is high strikeouts, bad walk rates, gives up home runs, unstable. That's the best way I can describe Sean Newcomb. Age 26 season, still can be had for a pretty affordable draft cost if you wanted to go there at, about pick 200, a little bit in front of Gausman, but I'm just not interested. What about you?
I'm in the same boat as you. I do think it kind of gets lost in the fact that he improved last year. And even though it gets lost, I'm struggling to see how he can take a much larger step forward. He just doesn't seem to have the consistency in his skills. He doesn't seem to be able to keep hitters off balance well enough to be good for a large enough chunk of the season for me to be excited about drafting him as anything more than a streaming pitcher.
I agree. I guess the best bet is to draft him for the first half of the year, because that seems to be where he really flourishes, and then see if you can trade him off after like maybe 2 months of having him, and maybe get some desperate owner some owner that thinks that maybe for once it's not going to be a first and second half thing. Maybe he can do it for the full year, and then maybe get your value that way. And that's the only thing I can really think of with Newcomb, because at this point it's pretty obvious or whatever to me that he's going to maintain his inconsistency going forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I kind of feel like a used car salesman when I have to do something like that, when I have to say, hey, you know, look, he took a step forward last year. Looks like he's taking another big one this year. You know, you can kind of play it off that way if you want. But in the back of your mind, you'd probably be thinking to yourself, like I really don't see strong results matching this pitcher profile. It just doesn't fall right.
All right, let's talk about the number five star, or at least as of right now, that's penciled in for the Braves. And I don't think that this will be the way it ends up shaking out. But Touki Toussaint, the fastball, curveball, split finger guy who was once an Arizona Diamondbacks prospect, last year with the Braves, he ended up getting a full month of September with them, which he, in six games, four starts, had a 4.7 ERA, 1.52 WHIP, decent swing strike rate, but was unable to get ahead of hitters. He only did half the time. League average is over 60%. So you're looking at a guy that really, really struggled at getting ahead of hitters, but he still had a good amount of strikeouts, 11 K per nine in the 23 inning pitch sample that we saw him in September with. I don't think that he ends up starting to begin the season. I think it's going to be Gohara's job to lose. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I don't mind Toussaint. If we are looking at it from the lens that he is going to be starting the season with a rotation spot in hand, I think he's going to be a 4 to 4.5 ERA guy. He's going to struggle with walks just because he always has. But I'm hoping these strikeout numbers remain. I don't think they will. I think he will be able to strike out a good amount of hitters. But it's going to be very kind of Sean Newcomb-esque. A high ERA, good strikeout numbers, a high WHIP and a high walks, and also able to give up the long ball more than we want. So what's your thoughts with Toussaint?
Well, I mean, the 6.52 walks per nine definitely jumps out. I mean, that's really, really difficult to pitch around. Now, granted, it was sort of his first taste of the bigs, and it was only 30 innings total, like I said, 23 innings in September. But my my point being on Toussaint is, I'm struggling to see how this is all going to shake out. I mean, there's no job security at all. I mean, you didn't even mention Coby Allard yet, who's another guy who could really play into this. And, they at Lucas Sims, they've got a number of different options. I mean, they're probably as deep an organization at the top organization-wise pitching as you can find anywhere. My gut tells me that it's Soroka's job to lose in the end. I know Gohara had some problems with his weight, and he had some other problems last year. So, I mean, certainly I would rank them. For myself personally, I would rather have Soroka, and then after Soroka, I would rather have Gohara, and then I would rather have Toussaint.
I think I'd pick Allard first over.
Oh, really?
Well, over Toussaint, at least.
Okay. Yep.
My ranks, and you also have Max Fried in there as well, but I like Soroka the most as well. Gohara is a close second, though. I think if he can get himself at least in shape enough, he could be a really serviceable back end starter. And then after that, Allard, and probably Max Fried after that. Kyle Wright's obviously in the mix, too. They just have a lot of those back-end arms, which is why, again, I don't think Toussaint ends up starting the year in the rotation. Or they could bump Tehran and put in one of those starters, too. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, the good news is that some of these guys that you'll be able to draft in deeper leagues, you'll drop them in draft them in deeper leagues, and if they're pitching good out of relief and the spot opens up, maybe they'll transition them back into being a starter. So Toussaint is in the mix, and I don't mean to pretend like he's not, because obviously when you have these gaudy K per nine numbers, pitching is one of the biggest mysteries to me in all of life. I mean, a couple little adjustments can mean a lot out on the mound, and we've seen it happen before. But Toussaint doesn't seem especially close to breaking out to me.
No, I agree. So let's go on to the bullpen, which the Braves have a pretty good just crop of pitchers. When you look at the back end of their starting rotation, while it doesn't really feature a strong ace or anything, you do have a ton of really decent arms in the rotation, or potentially decent arms in the rotation. And then you have some really good arms in the bullpen as well with this team. I guess the first guy we could talk about is Aroldis Vizcaino, who will more than likely have the job going into spring training, you would think. Really possessed the job for the majority of last year, but you also had AJ Minter get his run last year as well. He was really quality in that role. I guess my guy that I would put a stamp in right now, at least, is Vizcaino, but Minter is certainly on my radar as somebody that I'm going to draft in a ton of leagues, and as well as Dan Winkler. I still think Winkler has a lot of upside in there too. Just to put it in perspective for ADP purposes, Vizcaino is going 212, Minter 268, and then if you want to talk about Winkler, he's going much later. He's not even drafted at this point. So I think, you know, Minter, Vizcaino are obviously the guys. Jesse Biddle did some decent things as well as a lefty for them. But I think Minter is probably going to be my value play out of all of this, just because I think he could still land saves. And if he doesn't, he's a good ratios guy.
Yeah, the new closer landscape that we have, AJ Minter is a guy who filled in at times last year for Vizcaino. Vizcaino, of course, the former Cubs farmhand. Always had ridiculous, filthy stuff. I mean, they tried him as a starter early in his minor league career, and that wasn't going to work. But Vizcaino is the guy I like the most, and seems to be a guy that I hear a lot of people that are saying if they're going to wait and not pay for saves at all this year, Vizcaino is a guy who's got a lot of upside, because with the offense around him, I mean, if opportunities to me are the first and foremost thing in a closer. And I think Vizcaino comes out healthy, looks good in the spring. I'll be really excited to have him. And if he makes it 2.5 or 3 months before he gets hurt, at least I got all those saves in the books. And then I'll be jumping all over Fab on the next candidates, just like everybody else.
Absolutely. Sam Freeman, another name I kind of like in the mix there. So anyways, let's wrap this thing up, Chuck. Once again, promote what you're doing nowadays, and definitely tell people where you can be reached, etc.
I am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached on Twitter at just chucking it. We just got done pumping out our draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit, which was the number one in the sports category for the first few days that it was out. And we completely update it as we go along through the help of Justin Mason, who obviously is putting monumental effort into this cause for all of us to get our analysis out there. It's a great thing for you to buy. It's cheap, well under $10. So if you get the chance, make sure and do that. And otherwise, I'm just trying to get ready for all these different drafts that are going on, and just getting irritated that we can't figure out once and for all where exactly Harper's going to play, where exactly Machado's going to play, and all the other dominoes that will fall thereafter.
Yeah, it's been a little bit frustrating. I hope they end up signing somewhat soon. I think after the Super Bowl, we can expect them to sign somewhere, hopefully. And that way, we're like officially kicking off the spring training or preseason, at least the thoughts of it anyways. Pitchers and catchers report not too far away. It's starting to turn into baseball season as the snow starts to clear after, you know, Winter Storm Harbor, et cetera. So I keep saying et cetera a lot this episode. I don't know why. Maybe it's just instilled in my head. But you can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Like Chuck said, the Fantasy Benefit is an awesome tool for your draft, prep for this offseason and going into your drafts. It's an amazing tool in terms of just getting you ready. It has a ton of team previews, a ton of strategy content, a ton of prospects analysis from Matt Thompson as well, and a few from, you know, Walter McMichael and everybody else that does all the different content for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. A ton of great new writers this year, a really big base, the most we've ever had in the history of the site. So we're happy and proud of what we're putting out, and we hope that you guys can check that out. It's a brilliant piece of work. On top of that, it's static and it continues to update. It just really is a really amazing tool for you to use, and something that is going to help you throughout the off season, not just in one kind of magazine type thing that you get one time. So check out the draft guide. Check me out on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB, and check me out during the season and all the different various places I write and podcast for. So for Chuck and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.